teaching for tomorrow in the climate of today. Inspiring educators globally. Never stop learning. Never stop growing. The best teachers teach from the heart. Welcome to Powerful Pedagogy. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Powerful Pedagogy. Today I have with me Kisa Marks, maker of magic.
Hello. Thank you,
Kisa.
I'm
so happy that we got a chance to have this chat. Yes. For those of you who are wondering, Kisa is such an inspiration to so many in this educational field. With her, the Kids Crew, Kids Crew Adventures, and she has her own program, right?
Yes, I do.
And what ages does your program serve?
Two to school age, so it could be 5 or 6.
Okay, awesome. I teach 3 and 4 year olds, so like we're sort of right there in the same in the same situation. And I know that you've sort of experienced like your own sort of evolution in your practice. And I would love for you to just inspire those listening. Like, tell us a little bit about your journey in education.
Yes, thank you. Again, thank you for having me. I feel like it was an awakening.
Okay.
So I did my daycare the traditional way. You know, we're getting them school ready. And all of a sudden, we hit the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And we were just stuck there. You know, you couldn't go anywhere. The libraries were closed. The parks were closed. The kids that were there, the kids that their parents were essential workers, were very tense. You know, they were always fighting. There were a lot of meltdowns. And I'm like, we can't continue to do this. I have to figure out something to do. And so we had a very small backyard, took them out in the backyard, like, you know, I'm just going to make some magic back here.
Right.
We're going to do what we did, you know, in the 80s growing up as kids, and that's use your imagination and go outside and play.
Right.
And the kids just transformed right before my eyes. Wow. And not only did, you know, the stress levels go down and the dysregulation kind of regulate, they just became beings that I had never even met before. Amazing. And so I was like, there's something to this. And I kept going.
So you did not close during the pandemic. You kept your business open. Okay. Because we hear of so many, you know, primary like caregiver businesses that closed, you know, or suffered. And so I'm happy to hear that you were still able to provide care to, especially to those essential workers, right?
Yes. Yeah. So we closed for 2 days. And, but 80% of my clientele was in the medical profession. So I wound up opening back up. I had to be open.
Wow. Yeah. And I know, you know, for me, I know that teaching during the pandemic was, I don't know, like, I think it was traumatic, but then there was also the beautiful moments, right?
Yeah.
That will stay with us forever. So could you share a little bit about like what did that feel like? Like that day that you opened back and allowed them back, like, you know, were they wearing masks? Like, did you have to keep them apart? Like, what were you thinking?
So I was scared.
I was scared too.
Henny Penny is one of my favorite books. And it felt like the sky was falling.
Yeah.
And I remember just standing in my kitchen paralyzed by fear because I didn't know, no one knew what was going on, what we can do. And I was just like, I don't know what this means for my business. But then I thought about the babies.
Yeah.
And I thought, if this is so scary that you're stuck in the middle of your kitchen floor, what is that doing to them? And I was like, something has to change. And I feel like that was a gift for me because I was so dedicated into into shielding my babies from trauma that I actually helped myself.
Wow.
Because I had to, you know, be active and I had to do something. And once we went outside and saw the sky is not falling, it's a beautiful day.
Yes.
We all could take a collective breath and just be outside and heal.
Yeah. You are so right to like compare it to Henny Penny, because even from like, it was like spreading rumors, like, you know, Henny Penny told Turkey Lurkey, told Ducky Lucky, and they're all in the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I started back literally at the height of the pandemic, because we did online learning for 3 and 4 year olds for like the last, we shut down in March, April. So maybe like the last 2 months of school. Mm-hmm. And it was so chaotic.
Yes.
It was so chaotic. Like, God bless anybody who taught online. Yeah. I just want to say, like, shout out to those educators who, like, did it. But it was so chaotic that I was like, this is not it. At least for my age group, this is not it.
No. And there was an expectation for you to do it. And it's like, well, your kids can't sit down in circle for this long. You want them to get on camera and do this? No.
Right, for hours? And like have, you know, but we did it. We tried it. We had like a playtime online and a snack time online. And, you know, sometimes I was looking at like stuffed animals on the bed, you know, for, it was just crazy. And so we realized like at this age, it was more important for them to be in person and be with one another, and that there was so much more they were going to get. But I was scared too. And I remember they told us at my job, like, don't touch them. Don't let them touch you. You know, like all this, don't worry. The parents will teach them how to put their mask on so you won't have to touch them. Okay. So that was not the case.
So
that was not the case. And you know,
I'm sorry to jump.
Go ahead, please. Yes.
I'm triggered by this.
But I know it is. And it's nice to talk about it with somebody, because I had to fix so many masks,
snotty masks. And like, And so, and they just needed touch.
Yeah. They
needed that. These kids, like, you could feel their tension. You can feel their fear and frustration. They don't know where their friends are. They don't know why they can't go to the library or to the park. They don't know any of these things. And now you're telling me that I can't come hug you and wipe my nose on your leg like I used to.
right.
So I was very much a renegade with that. And I was like, nah, I can't not touch this child. Yeah. I can't not console this child. I have to be there for them, because I don't want them to remember a time when everybody's face was covered, no one could touch, and they were afraid.
Yeah. And we were afraid.
So we can be scared together, and we can sit here and be scared together.
But we made it through.
We made it. So yes. And like I said, I thank that time, because it really, I just call it an awakening. I opened my eyes to what was sitting right in front of me, and everything changed.
Wow. That's amazing. So on your website, and I know you give workshops and stuff to teachers who are sort of curious and sort of want to incorporate more nature and more risk taking. I took a look at some of your photos, and if you go to Kisa's website, there's some awesome photos. I mean, I see like 2x4s and like, it just looks like all types of fun, like magic, maker of magic. That's who you are. Yes. So will you tell us a little bit, like, how did that come up? You know, like just that whole idea of like being okay and seeing the benefit in children taking risks.
So that came, again, from the pandemic time, when there were the civil unrest. So when George Floyd happened and there was all this collective kind of uprising, and there was the constant saying, you know, Black boy joy and Black girl magic and all of this empowerment. And I started thinking to myself, well, people want this on demand. But you need to start with this. You need to plant that seed when they're little children. And we need to empower them. And the way that we empower them is to allow them to take risk, allow them to speak their minds.
Yes.
Allow them to think and be on their own. And I was like, I'm going that way.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so where did you even get all the stuff from your backyard? I'm like, that looks amazing. I would love to bring my class there.
So actually one of my clients was creating like this really high treehouse in their backyard. And I was like, can we come by?
Really? Oh my goodness. Yes.
So we all walked. We did a little field trip, walked like with three blocks down and went to their house, and they went up in the high tree house, and then they had all this lumber. And I'm like, oh, you know, do you want us to move it? I was like, no, they can play with that. Yeah. And that was just what they did. So yeah, it was a great, they still talk about that now.
Wow.
That experience. Yeah.
Wow. And I have found like, you know, there's, you know, nature helps regulate young children.
Yes.
Like their vestibular systems, like it just helps regulate them. Like, yes. 'Cause it's a total sensory experience for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have found like, you know, bringing my students out, having them get their hands dirty, you know, gets their, you know, dirt on their face, whatever it is so rewarding. And they're actually like so much more in tune and engaged and focused.
Yes. You know,
when they're using all of their senses, and nature provides that.
Yeah. And we want them to focus so they can learn. And so I think people miss that part. Like when you think they need to sit down in chairs and listen to what you're saying. No, actually they need to be outside and they need to be, you know, engaged in such a way that the learning is sticking.
Yeah.
So let them go outside and let them do what they do best. And they're going to be all right.
Right. Because they're natural born innovators.
Yes. Right? Yes. And they're so creative. And somebody said to me, excuse me, I think it was on another podcast. I was speaking to someone and she was saying how she worked at this nature school. And the first day she was there, she was blown away because none of the kids were crying. Like it was very little fear or emotion. And the other teacher mentioned to her, because it's outside, and even if they don't know each other, everyone is familiar with outside.
Oh, that's huge, though.
Yes. That, yes.
That is huge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unfortunately, I still deal with the constraints of, you know, I teach at a larger school, and so, you mm-hmm. know, we have to share the outside time, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we're mm-hmm. on a schedule, but, mm-hmm. you know, the beauty of sort of being able to have your own program and bring children out whenever yeah. you want to, or even staying out there for hours, weather permitting.
Yeah.
And I always tell my families at the beginning of the year, like, if it's raining, we're going out. If it's snowing, we're going out. Like, there's no such thing as bad weather. There's yep. only bad clothing, like not yep. being prepared for the clothing.
Yes. Yes, we're going out no matter what. And that was hard for me because I wasn't naturally an outdoorsy type person. Mm. But once I saw that it helped everyone, including me, I was like, we're going anywhere. So,
yes.
Yeah, all weather, we're going outside. You got your mud suit. We have your snow suit. We got your little balaclava. We have everything and we're going.
Exactly. Umbrella, if you want it, you umbrella. Can bring it. You can leave it. Like, there's yeah. nothing wrong with getting, you know, rain on you. Rain only yeah. makes things grow. I tell that yeah. to my children, like, all the time. Like, rain mm-hmm. just only makes things grow.
Yeah.
So, and even I think, you know, one of the key pieces is the parent communication, right?
Yes.
And helping them see how important these experiences are.
Yeah, because it's a learning curve for everyone. I have adult children. So my youngest is 20, and he's one of the last groups of children that went outside to go play.
Mm.
So the children that I care for, these are children that are basically inside all the time. And their parents don't really see the benefit, or they didn't really see the benefit. So it's our job to explain the benefits. And at first, I think they were like, what is she talking about? But,
right.
But the more I started to point out the things that they needed, you know, you want them to be able to write, but you don't want to sit them down with a pencil and force them to write on paper. Let them play in the dirt. Let them play with sticks. Let them play outside and, you know, work those little fingers. Yeah. And let them run up the slide. Let them get their core strong. These are all things that will help them get school ready like you want them to be.
Exactly. And they're working that, you know, the fine motor skills, and they're getting all that manual dexterity in their hands. Like, there's so many other ways, you know, in lieu of swiping, you know, because I feel like we're such a technology driven age. Like, there are infants, you know, 18 months old who, you know, are swiping, and they're already, you know, the muscles that they're using to do that are, you know, sort of may even be hindering the ones that they need to write. So
yes,
I think parent communication is huge. How do you convince parents or teach and educate parents that, like, this is beneficial? How did you go about doing that?
Excuse me. So the one thing that I did was, or one thing that I do is I constantly repeat myself.
Okay.
So that it will sink in. You know, I don't want to beat you over the head with it. But when you're saying, oh, my child has to read them, do work in the workbook, I'm going to say, well, you know what? That really isn't beneficial for them. Or, oh, my child knows their ABCs. Or, oh, maybe they just know how to repeat their ABCs, you know, just the little seeds so they understand these are things that we've been programmed to think are correct for our children, but they're really doing a disservice to them. And so if we want it to stick and we want them to truly learn, we have to go about it the right way.
Yes, because children are like kinesthetic learners. Like,
yes, they have to move. They have to do it. They have to be hands-on in order for them to truly flourish. And all of those other things, that's enclosing them. And you don't want to do that.
Yeah. Did you have a lot of pushback from families, or did they all jump on board?
So I have a group that they're just down the ride. I don't know if they...
They're here for it.
Yes. So I think they were like, she may have lost it. But they had faith that I was going somewhere with it, and they were willing to go with me. And now they can see it.
Yeah.
Because it took a while. You know, we had to undo so many things to get to where we are now. But seeing is believing, and they
unlearn.
You have to unlearn. Yeah.
Have you noticed and experienced that children's needs have changed in the last 3 years? Are you feeling the impact on children's social emotional development not being where it was a few years ago? Well, we hear you and we see you, and that's why WonderLED has prepared the summit that will help you excel in today's world. Spend May 6th through 9th with us and leave with the toolkit you need to calm classroom chaos, reduce your own stress, and nurture children's self-regulation, socialization, and focus. With these tools, you can be the early childhood educator who makes a difference in children's lives, no matter the circumstances. Each day we'll cover a different topic, ranging from process art, storytelling, open-ended materials, and play. We also have 6 play labs for you to join in on that will take certain materials to a whole new level for you. It's free, and the 4 days you spend will pay off for a lifetime. Grab your free ticket today by heading over to freetoplaysummit.com, and we will see you May 6th through 9th. Going through that shift as a parent, I'm sure, is huge, but I think, you know, sometimes it does start with us as educators going through the shift ourselves.
Yes.
And learning ourselves and seeing the importance ourselves. And then we can educate and say, like, listen, like, research shows that, like,
yes,
20 minutes of doing this a day, or playing with mud, or planting, like, soy, like, whatever you want to call it, like,
yeah,
actually helps build neurons and connections in a a young child's brain. You know, sometimes it hits us. Exactly.
Yes, we need that. And I think that's the other thing that my parents can get behind is the fact that I can say, hey, I did this for 20 years. Mm. And 4 years ago, I realized everything I was doing was wrong.
Wow. Wow.
So if I can do that and I can sit and deconstruct everything, I had three children, you know?
Yeah.
I raised my children this way. And now I'm seeing the brain science and all of that is wrong. And so we just need to do it differently.
It's huge. That is huge, Kisa.
Yeah.
And it took a pandemic, right?
Yep. Yeah, only took a pandemic.
Only took a little pandemic. Yes, exactly. We almost like shut down the world.
Right. That's it.
So yeah. So walk us through, like, what does a typical day in your program look like?
Oh, a typical day is like home. Mm. The kids walk in, and it's just like, you know, we talk about. We have like rituals. So you walk in, you talk about what you ate for dinner. What your night was like, did you remember your dream or not remember your dream?
I love asking that question too.
Yes. And then we talk about sort of like, what do we want to do for the day? And I just let them figure it out. They get into their little groups and then we'll figure out an adventure. That adventure might be inside, it might be outside, it might be both because we have a flow. So they can go in and out. I have the first floor and the basement are dedicated to work. So they can go between up and down and out.
Wow.
And so you just spend your time. It's so relaxed. Like, I remember when my kids were little and being out with them on the weekend and being like, why can't work be like this? It is like that every day. Every single day is like a weekend with my own children.
Wow. So they're allowed literally to go like indoors, outdoors, like the doors just open. Like,
yeah, it's a flow. And just like, Miss Kisa, we're going to go outside right now. And I'm just like, okay.
That's amazing. No, that is literally, I mean, that's such a blessing. You know? And I'm sure you see a difference in them.
Such a difference. I was just telling two of my parents yesterday how I was watching two of my oldest girls talk. It was as if I was watching two adults, the freedom that they had to have this conversation and just laugh and talk. It gave me goosebumps because children don't have permission to be themselves. You never see that in the classroom. Just chopping it up and, you know, talking to each other. You never see it. So I was like, oh, what a blessing that I get to witness these children just be.
Yeah, and just have their own autonomy. Like,
yes.
You know, where I say, like, you know, I may see children in conversation, but again, when you're part of like sort of the larger school system, everything is so, you are sort of dealing with some sort of constraints, right? So our outdoor time is our outdoor time. And even if I wanted to go out, like there might be another class on the roof. So like, these are sort of constraints that sort of, you know, some educators may have.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just the beauty of being able to have children just go in and out. We're going out now. Like, all right. You know?
Well, I'm going to come back in. All right.
Yeah. And just that, how you've empowered them to be able to make their own decisions, like that's probably why they have taken ownership and you hear them talking the way that they do.
That is what I thought, is that they have to feel like they own their own bodies.
Yeah.
And I want them to know that now, because if I give them a taste of that autonomy, no one can take it away.
Mm.
If you've been free, you're never going to let anybody lock you up.
Yes. Speak on it.
Yes.
Yes.
So I'm like, this is a gift that we have.
Yeah.
We can give them the freedom. And then when they go into the school system, they will be able to hold a mirror to those teachers because they're not going to take it. So the teacher who doesn't know and wants to enclose those children and, you know, like excessive rules and things like that, they're not going to have it. It's going to be a problem. Yeah. And they're going to know how to communicate to their grown up. They might not say it to the teacher, but they can go home and be like, uh-uh, I did not like that. Exactly. And they will say why.
Mm-hmm. Have you found that it like impacted their social emotional like regulation, being able to be outside more? Like, I know you said when you saw the other outdoor base, like you didn't see a lot of tears or crying. Have you found mm-hmm. the same in your own students?
Yes. Yes. The other way though. Okay. So what I found was when I was academic centered, there wasn't a lot of crying. There wasn't. And I would always say that with sort of pride, like, you know, it doesn't lend itself to, you know, like meltdowns in this environment. Yeah. I didn't realize that what I was saying was really horrible because the environment didn't lend itself to a meltdown. Now, if my children, if they're feeling sad, you're going to feel your feelings until the feelings are gone. So there is more crying, but it's not in a like super dysregulated way. If you're sad, you're sad and you understand and you know it's okay for you to be sad.
Right. It's almost like giving them permission to feel.
Yes. Yep. Right? Yep. Mm-hmm. So I do see them cry much more than I did when I was academic centered, but in a way that
is so healthy.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're just healthy. Vulnerable and you get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you've ever been, like, I know me, especially like when I'm off during the summer, mm-hmm. I go back to nature. Like I literally, like, you know, I kind of disappear for a little bit and, you know, Miss mm-hmm. Lynette is up in them woods.
Yeah. Yeah. You need
with
it.
My feet in the grass. And there is something emotional about that connection. It is something that just sort of allows and prompts you to get grounded.
Yes.
To reset and reconnect. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I can, and you feel like, you know, you're in your feelings, you know?
Yeah.
Even if it's a feeling of awe, but you're very aware of how you're feeling and almost you're very aware of sort of how small you are in sort of this grandiose world.
Yes.
The sky and the sun and the little sounds and the animals and, you know, just all of that. You're so much more aware. So I can imagine it would also do the same for children to make them also very aware of how they're feeling in that moment.
How they're feeling and just aware of everything around them. I was telling my mom, I went to school for fiction writing and we would play these games where you prompts, you know, different prompts. And that one was faraway sounds and close-up sounds. My kids do that every day.
Wait, so tell me more about that. Faraway sounds and close-up sounds.
They try to distinguish whether a loud sound is a garbage truck or a construction truck or, you know, whatever type of vehicle that it is. And then I live right off of a busy street. So they go to the window and then celebrate whatever it actually was. They can hear different birds. We have a storm siren that goes off the first Tuesday of every month. They are listening. When they come in at the beginning of the month, they're like, it's siren day.
Really? So they're waiting for it.
It's like half a mile away. Yeah. But they're listening for those sounds to hear it go off so that they can notify everybody else. We count the garbage trucks. So they're listening when we go for our walks. Can you hear the garbage truck? Can you hear it? It's coming. I think it's that way. I think it's this way. So they do that every single day. They're just very, very focused and very aware.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yes, listening to sound. So I'm in an urban area, and yes, we hear all the sounds. And, you know, whenever there's a fire truck, exactly. And knowing like the ambulance siren from the fire truck siren from the police siren, like they're all different, right? Mm-hmm. And so. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the nature part, but there's also like that part of just sort of like using what's in your community, what is your surroundings are to enhance their senses. It's huge.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
So I guess what advice would you give to, let's say, a home provider or a school or somebody that may have a backyard and that just sort of wants to do more free play or wants to sort of set it up where their children, their students can sort of move in and out more freely?
I would say to just start.
Okay.
Go outside. Don't worry about whether you have everything. Do it slowly. If you can open up in the day, when you open up in the morning, the kids are always already gonna have their shoes on, their jackets on, if it's windy outside or whatever, and stay outside for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Try to bring some cereal outside. Let them graze. If you can wake up from snack or before your snack, go for a walk. And then just extend that. Bring your inside toys outside. Little by little, until you feel confident enough to know you can do it. Because there's no, I think the one thing that sends us off is that there's this idea that we need to be like the overall wearing woodland behind us in order to be nature-based. And that's not true. I live across the street from Chicago.
Yeah.
And we are nature-based because we get outside every single day. So I want to encourage people, even if you're not in a place that's safe all the time, you can have nature. You can fill your entire house with plants. You can open up the windows. You can plant an indoor garden. You don't have to conform to the rules that they say on social media. This is nature-based. Nature is everywhere.
Mm.
And you create that.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm. Yeah. All of that and then some. Same, you know, just being in urban areas, like it's all around us and we can't bring it into the classroom. I have a whole bin of stones and sticks and like you name it, like
shells and every single thing. One of my babies just went out of town and she brought me back rocks and I was in tears. Like, I was like, oh, and she brought a golden rock. Yeah, I love gold. Yes. And so I think this sparkle. He was like, I brought this sparkle rock for you.
So, oh my goodness. I love it. Yeah,
just to know that these are things that nature will become a core memory no matter what. Yeah. You're going to remember the beach, the water, sand, earth, grass. So let them be in it as much as possible so they can have that state of joy all the time, you know, like being outside and having a connection to it where you know it's a happy place and a safe place, especially for us, for our little Black boys and Black girls and brown people of color, where we don't always feel safe out in nature.
Yeah.
You want to connect to it where we feel safe. And it's a place of joy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Kisa, thank you so much. Will you tell people, where can we find you? I know you have an amazing website that I've already stalked a little bit. But tell us if we want to learn more. And then I know you also give workshops, right?
I do. So I have a series, 3 workshops that are on playmarket.net. And that one is on nature play. And that's not just Woods and White Kids. Yeah. And one is called the Play-Based Pipeline. It's like rerouting the preschool to prison pipeline through play.
Yeah.
We do that. And the other is Deconstructing Early Learning. So those are all, you know, it's all one under one umbrella of the Deconstructing Early Learning, but it's just broken down in different fragments. And I'm always going to be on social media because I want the information to be accessible. So we have the website, which is kidcrewadventures.com.
Yes.
And we're on Instagram under Kid Crew Adventures.
Yeah. So please, if you're listening, check out kidcrewadventures.com. Mm-hmm. And there's so many great resources, especially if you're operating out of a space and you have a backyard attached. And like Kisa, you've just given us so many concrete examples of what someone could do if they do want to be more nature-based. So
thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy that we got to do this and have this talk. It's been lovely chatting with you.
Thank you so much for having me. I feel like this is the universe because I was listening to your podcast, and sometimes I fangirl. And when I fangirl, I want to write people. And I was just like, I have to find her. I have to find her. And then I went to my inbox and you were there. The same day, the same time.
Because your work, I was like, oh my gosh, like, yes. And just sort of what you were doing and your kid. I think there's a picture of like your children out in the rain. And I was like, yes, a fellow educator of color that like speaks the same language and sees the benefit. Like, you know, like I know there are a lot of progressive schools that get it, right? They're on board. Sometimes I feel like for people of color, it's a little bit more challenging for us to sort of really embrace. One, there is a need for, and I see it, there is a need, or I see there's a fear or a concern that our parents have of color, of their children sort of measuring up, right? When they start kindergarten and knowing the things, which I think sometimes push our daycares and our home care providers into that academic things. So we'll make sure they're doing worksheets and make sure they know this so they can compete with that. But I also feel like there's also a shift happening.
And we're realizing. I know there is one. So for 13 years I've had the daycare, and for 11 of those years, I may have only had one Black child or maybe two. Now I have half of my children are Black. And I think that's because of that shift, because we didn't think this was for us. We thought our children would fall behind if they did this.
Right.
And so there is a shift because people are seeing the importance of it. And they're like, no, my baby deserves that just like these other children do.
Yes. That's it. That's it. Yeah. And that's everything. Yeah. Well, we'll definitely have to do this again, maybe next season.
We do.
But if you're looking for Kisa and if you want to learn more about any of her workshops or her deconstructing series, please head on over to Kid Crew Adventures. All right. Signing out. Thank you, Kisa.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
You too. Powerful. 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 Powerful.